is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, December 17, 2019. I'm Buster Olney, and our producer, Troy Farkas, is back in Bristol. And Troy, you are going to be the star of today's show because your Texas Rangers are on the move. According to Caesars Sportsbook, your Rangers have moved from 100-1 to 40-1 to win the World Series. This in the aftermath of all the moves they made so far this winter, the most recent being the trade for two-time Cy Young Award winner Corey Kluber. What do you think, Troy?
Stacked rotation now, Buster. I was in the Denver airport on Sunday, and I had a layover, and I break out my laptop. I see the news that the Rangers get Kluber, and I yell out such a huge scream in the middle of the Denver airport. People probably thought I was nuts. I went wild. I was so happy, and it made my 4-hour plane ride back to Hartford, Connecticut so much more enjoyable.
Unbelievable. Their rotation right now, Corey Kluber, Mike Minor, Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson, Jordan Lyles, John Daniels, the Rangers general manager, president of baseball ops, was on a conference call with reporters talking about the acquisition of Kluber.
Last year, Corey was the elite pitcher in the game for an extended stretch. Five straight top 10 Cy Young finishes and won it twice, and postseason and everything that it said he did. Last year was, a little bit of a lost year for him. But, we think the reasons for it, the comebacker and the oblique at the end are the type of things that don't necessarily give us pause. And in some cases, in some ways, actually, I think the time off may have been a good thing, a little bit of a blessing in disguise, and that he's thrown a lot in it. The previous few years, the start of last season wasn't going the way that he's accustomed to pitching.
All right, the news hasn't been all good for the Rangers. The other day, they had a fire at their new ballpark, which will open next spring. That damaged about 2,000 square feet near the roof, construction officials said. But the Rangers say that the delay or the opening, the expected opening, is not going to be delayed based on that. We got some recent signings and trades. Wade Miley agreed to a 2-year, $15 million deal with the Cincinnati Reds. Sergio Romo returning to the Twins on a 1-year contract. Anthony Rendon was introduced by the Angels the other day, having agreed to a 7-year, $245 million deal. Here's Rendon on why he signed with the Angels.
They didn't give me a warning that I was supposed to come up here and speak, so I'm going to blame Scott on that one. But, man, this is just really exciting. They really wanted me to be a part of the Angel organization. That means so much to me and my family to have that respect, to feel wanted, to want someone to come be a part of your family. And that was one important thing that we always talked about when trying to look for an organization where we wanted to head to or stay at, was a family atmosphere, somewhere that we can implant our roots in, build a foundation, and just grow our family together. And from being in Southern California so far, I think we can get used to the weather and the atmosphere out here. So we're really excited, and I thank everyone for coming out, all the former players. Fletch, thank you for the jersey. I wasn't sure if I was going to even keep the number, so no one reached out to me, but I'll talk to you about it later. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, so I was laughing because a lot of what Rendon said in this press conference generated opinions on social media. He made one reference to why he didn't sign with the Dodgers. We'll be talking about that coming up with Tim Kirkchin. Here's Rendon talking about hearing from Mike Trout after he signed.
Yes, Trout reached out to me once we had solidified the deal. I believe it was Wednesday. And based on his exclamation points in his text, he seemed really excited. So we were both just discussing on how we can continue to move forward and how we're just looking forward to the season.
Joe Maddon talked about what signing Rendon means for the Angels.
That's big. It's really big. It's a great first step. It energizes the team itself. Mike Trout's been texting with me constantly since this occurred. I'm still getting to know Michael also. Albert, everybody's excited. So the players are excited. It definitely energizes the fan base, and it's just the first step. We know that we have to fill up the pitching staff to make this all work. But when you have Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon in the same lineup. And then you got Albert Pujols, David Fletcher, big fan, Andrelton Simmons, could go on and on, man. There's a lot of good players out there that I'm getting to know. Some young guys haven't even been there yet. So believe me, I'm not going to get too nuts right now, but I promise you, as soon as the new year occurs and Jay and I start driving out west in our RV, it'll really hit me at that point.
I was texting back and forth with Madden the other day about sort of the fun process of looking at his group of players and deciding who bats where. He could go Trout in the two-hole. He could go Otani in the three-hole. He could go Rendon in the fourth-hole. This is all speculation for me. He also, as he did with the Cubs, he could put Trout in the leadoff spot in the way that he did with Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles that. The Blue Jays agreed to a two-year deal with pitcher Tanner Roark. And Major League Baseball and the union agreed to changes to the drug testing program. Baseball will start testing for opioids and cocaine, but only players who do not cooperate with their treatment plans will be subject to discipline. Marijuana will be removed from the list of drug abuse and will be treated the same as alcohol as part of changes announced in the joint drug agreement between MLB and the Players Association. Talks to add testing for opioids began after Angels pitcher Tyler Skaggs was found dead in his hotel room July 1st. A medical examiner's office said he died after choking on his vomit with a toxic mix of alcohol and the painkillers, fentanyl and oxy in his body. Let's get to it.
Seam heads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirchin on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirchin covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, before we dive into what you and I love the most, which is the player acquisitions, the trades, the free agency, I want to ask you about a couple things, a couple of changes in baseball. First off, we got word from Major League Baseball that and the Player Association that they have altered their drug testing. What did you think about that decision?
Well, I found it interesting that they're no longer testing, at least in the minor league level, for marijuana. Now, I don't know anything about marijuana, Buster. I wouldn't know what it does or doesn't do. But it seems there are some medicinal values, at least, and attributes to marijuana that I don't know about because I wouldn't know. But friends of mine who know this stuff tell me that. So maybe that was a wise thing to do, is to look at this and say, all right, what is the real problem here? And if marijuana is not the real problem, maybe we should concentrate on what the real issues are. That was my first takeaway from that.
I would agree with you. And I also think it, from a practical standpoint, it makes sense because you know, you're concerned about the use of these painkillers. You know, in the news about Tyler Skaggs, I think gave a window into that. You know, through the years I covered baseball, I think pitchers have a hard time dealing with pain. And if somebody's having a problem with that, I'm glad now that potentially they could have a new to give help to those people who need help. And on the other hand, and I know you've heard this too, and I'm going to cast a very wide net. There have been times in my years of covering baseball, I've had executives, I've had managers, I've had scouts say, yeah, that team has a lot of guys who use pot, and everybody kind of knows it, no one really cares, and there's no point in sort of having everyone dance around these rules that we know are basically ignored anyway.
Yeah, and I know from the teams I've covered over the years that it's something that was going on, and again,
right.
I'm with you on the pain situation here is that playing every, I'm not going to defend every baseball player, but they do not get enough credit for going out there all the time. And a pitcher, especially, who's trying to pitch his way through an injury may need some help. And if marijuana used in the proper way can do that, and all we seem to care about from the union these days is taking care of our players, if this is one way that it might work, then I think we need to at least look at it.
And then we got the study from Major League Baseball that reached a conclusion, this committee, that the balls in 2019 were not juiced. I've gotten to this point with this conversation, Tim, where I'm like, whatever, I'm just going to watch the games. And then we'll see what we see. What about you?
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on either, Buster. I just know that players told me this ball is different. It's harder. The
yep.
seams are lower. There's less drag. I've heard every possible scenario to this, and I think there's something to all of it. However, I think the bigger thing is players are bigger and stronger than ever. They are getting the ball in the air more often, which is what they're trying to do. So if the ball's a little harder and the approach of the hitters is such that I'm going to take until I can find a pitch that I can drive somewhere and hit 450 feet, I think that is the biggest reason for the home run rate, not just in 2019, but over the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen this change where guys are trying to go deep all the time, which explains to some degree the enormous strikeout rate that we look at every year now. So, yes, I think something was done with the ball, and I mean, think the ball was different last year. I don't think it was a conspiracy to raise the home run level. I don't think we needed to do that to raise the home run level. I'm going to watch the games next year, and I'm not going to be watching, hey, that ball would not have been out last year. I just don't think anyone is good enough to see the difference between a ball that travels maybe 8 feet farther than the one last year or the year before.
But the one sure prediction that you and I can make is somebody is going to say something, and it's probably going to happen in the first week. Somebody anonymously is going to say the balls are juiced or the balls are dead. And my response has always been, and we had a bit of this conversation last summer, it's not as if the baseball has been consistent throughout baseball history, Tim.
Yes, and we're going to hear those voices the first week of spring training, Buster, because that's the first thing that a lot of people are going to be looking at when spring training begins is not, you know, what do the Astros look like or what do the Rangers look like? It's going to be what does the baseball look like? And we're going to jump to every conclusion on a windy day when a middle infielder hits a ball to the opposite field. They're going to say, look, no change in the baseball. And when some big guy hits one into the wind and it doesn't go anywhere, oh, the ball is dead. I'm not going to buy it. I'll watch with my own two eyes, and then we'll go from there.
All right, give me some thoughts on some of these deals. Corey Kluber going from the Indians to the Texas Rangers. What'd you think?
Well, I thought the Indians could have and should have gotten more than what they got, even though Emmanuel Clase, I saw him pitch at the end of last year. He threw 100 and completely dominated the Yankees, at least in one inning of a booth game that I did. And they think he has a chance to be a closer someday, so that's worth it. But I thought they could get more for Corey Kluber, but now we have to see how much Corey Kluber has left with injuries and everything else. I do understand it from the Indians' end. They almost made the playoffs without much of a contribution from him. He does have an injury issue now. He does make an enormous amount of money, and they do have tremendous young pitching on that team. So I think I wasn't surprised they moved him. I thought they would get more for him. And if he's really good again, then the Rangers have a chance to take a step forward with him at the top of their rotation.
I canvassed a bunch of people around baseball about this trade. Most of the people that I spoke with liked the trade for Cleveland. They felt like that, you know, that they did okay because they, you know, Class A, has that big power arm that you referenced and, you know, has high potential. I did have one executive say to me that he likes, and it's going to make Troy smile because he's a Ranger fan, Tim. He liked the trade for the Rangers because the potential upside of contribution from Kluber might be higher than what the Indians got. I do wonder if generally people will feel differently about this trade because I think in social media and the media, the Indians have gotten hammered for it. If the Indians use the money saved in the Kluber trade and they pour it into the major league team and they sign a second baseman like Cesar Hernandez, that casual fans might feel differently about it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And you're right. If you're going to save that much money on Corey Kluber, then you have to make it up someplace else to improve your team because they need more than a little help to keep the Indians in the playoffs for next year. They can't just assume we're going to make it because we have great young pitching. They need to do more. And if they don't do more, then shame on the Indians because they need to do a couple more things.
I referenced the reaction to the Kluber trade, and Tim, this to me is one of the cancerous effects of tanking in baseball, that when Kluber was traded, I saw on social media, I saw written by some reporters that they felt like, okay, this is a sign that the Indians are cashing out, they're not going to try to win, and I shook my head. The Indians the last 7 years have more wins than any other American League team. They've averaged 91 wins a year. And Corey Kluber made only 7 starts for them last year. They won without Corey Kluber last year. They won 93 games. They were contending throughout the year. From what I understand, I think the current plans are to keep Francisco Lindor. You have Jose Ramirez. You have Carlos Santana. You've got Brad Hand at the back of your bullpen. You've got Shane Bieber, who finished fourth in the American League Cy Young Award voting last year. You got Carlos Carrasco coming back. That, to me, is a team that could compete in a weak American League Central for sure. But I think that's kind of where we are right now, where people assume, well, if you trade one of these expensive guys, then you're just going to start dumping salaries. What do you think? Do you agree with my theory or disagree?
Yes, I did this on SportsCenter the other night. This is not some white flag that the Indians are giving up, and now they have to trade Francisco Lindor because they just traded Corey Kluber. Corey Kluber is a really good pitcher, but he's not Francisco Lindor in any way when it comes to playing all the time, youth, health, everything else. Maybe they'll still trade Lindor, but not unless they get equal value that can help them win in 2019. Otherwise, I think they're going into the season with Lindor. They're going to try to win with that pitching with one of the best players in the game at the top of the order, and they're not going to trade him unless the perfect deal comes along. And if it doesn't, they're going to try to win with him. But if something goes wrong and somehow they fall out of the race and they have to trade him at the end of July, I understand, and I understand he'll get more value now if you get him for 2 years before free agency, but they still have a good team that can win. And to trade Lindor right now because they traded Kluber, I don't think those two connect.
No, I 100% agree with you. The Arizona Diamondbacks shocked the baseball world. Five-year deal with Madison Bumgarner, $85 million. Its present-day value isn't quite that high because about $15 million is deferred. I love this conversation around this signing, Tim, because as you know, a lot of the underlying metrics about Bumgarner gave teams a lot of concern. One of those metrics, his ERA the last 2 years when he was pitching outside of San Francisco, almost 3 runs worse. His fastball velocity has dipped slightly, but the damage done on his fastball, that's jumped up. Last year, opponents had a 504 slugging percentage against his fastball, and the rate of hard hit balls against him have gone up. So as he was going through his process, I had evaluators saying, boy, you know, I'm worried about the home road splits. I'm worried about his fastball. I'm worried how it'll hold up. And in talking with sources after the Diamondbacks signed him, Diamondbacks basically did a lot of digging into him. They essentially bet that this is someone, as he moves from the Giants to the Diamondbacks, is going to be more open to listening to analytics, to using some of the information that Diamondbacks they feel like can help him defensively with the work that they do behind him. And they're betting on the guy, Tim. And if there's someone who can defy analytics in baseball, it's Madison Bumgarner. What'd you think?
Yes, and I would bet on that guy at all costs. I mean, I understand all of that. Yes, maybe there's so much mileage on that arm because of what he's been through. And I mean, because he's pitched for so long in the major leagues. He's only 30, but he's been doing this for 10 years, Felix Hernandez went through this, and the fastball disappeared, and maybe that's going on with Bumgarner. However, he's still the best pitcher on their team. They didn't have to trade anybody to get him. He still hates hitters. He hates the opponent. He's big and strong and mean, and he didn't go to the Dodgers. So I think in every way, this benefits the Diamondbacks. Do I think he's the same pitcher he was 5 years ago? No, the numbers suggest that he's not. But this thought that he's completely on the downside and he's not going to be able to help the Diamondbacks, I'm just not buying that. I know that guy, and he is a killer competitor, and he's going to do whatever it takes to be good again, even if he has to make some adjustments, which the Diamondbacks can help him with.
Two more quick ones for you before you go. First, Anthony Rendon generated a lot of comment after his introductory press conference with the Angels in which he said the reason why, or cited one of the reasons why he didn't join the Dodgers was the quote-unquote Hollywood lifestyle, and there were a billion tweets from fans saying, what are you talking about? The Dodgers play less than an hour from where the Angels play, and I know Anthony Rendon, and you know Anthony Rendon, and the comment made complete sense to me, Tim, because I always think of him as being a guy, he doesn't want to, like, have Hollywood people standing around and star movie stars waiting to talk to him. He just wants to go and play. And under the umbrella of Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani and Albert Pujols and other stars in that team, he can do that. So I totally get it, having some sense of Rendon.
Yeah, I was not offended on any level. Like, oh my gosh, he's afraid of the limelight. They just won the World Series. He's the best player on their team winning the World Series. And yes, he's been surrounded by some big stars in Washington, and we all understand that, but I did not look at that like I have to shy away from this, and I'm glad I can get lost in the Angels. The Angels are a big market team now, and there's going to be a microscope under them because of Rendon and because of Ohtani and Trout and Pujols and everybody else. So I'm not buying that he is wilting in any way from the pressure and couldn't handle Hollywood. I think you're absolutely right. I just don't think he has any interest in meeting a bunch of movie stars when all he really likes to do is play third base and hit.
All right, last one. I'm going to give you an impossible question, which you are required to answer. I'm doing those positional rankings as I took last year off, but I'm going to pick it up again in January. And without a doubt, this year, the toughest position is right field, okay? So I need you to rank these four players in order, 1 through 4. By the way, I'm rescuing you by not including George Springer. He's going to be my center field group. These are the four players I need you to rank in order, 1 through 4. Christian Yelich, Mookie Betts, Cody Bellinger, Aaron Judge.
Thanks a lot for this. Okay, I'm going to go. Boy, this is impossible.
Impossible!
All right, I'm going to go with Bellinger 1. Won the MVP.
Wow.
He had a great year. He won a Gold Glove. I'm putting him out there because I love his swing that much. I'm going to put Yelich 2 because if he hadn't gotten hurt, I think he might have won the MVP. And his last two seasons have been remarkable. And he runs the bases better than Bellinger, but he's not the same defensive player that Bellinger is. I've got Betts 3rd. I would have had him 1st on this list a year ago, but he didn't look like the exact same fabulous player last year that he was the year before, and I worry a tiny bit about he's a little bit slight of build, and maybe that works against him once in a while. And I've got Aaron Judge 4th, and I'm not real confident about that either. Boy, this is an impossible list. You could do any one of 1 through 4 on this list, but I'm going Bellinger, Yelich, Betts, Judge.
You had the answer. Aaron Judge 4th, adjusted OPS last year of 143. And you know this: the next time you see our friend Aaron Boone, he's gonna pop you on top of the head. Like, what are you kidding? Well, you got my guy 4th. Anyway,
well,
Tim, thanks for doing this.
On top of the head, no matter what I said. So it doesn't matter.
All right, sir. Well, thanks for doing this.
Okay, Buster. Talk to you soon.
Numbers game.
Sarah Lang's a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And, Sarah, I'm going to absolutely ruin your day by giving you the same question and making you answer that I just did with Tim. I'm doing these positional rankings for ESPN.com that will come out at in the new year. And without a doubt, the toughest position to do is right field. And I'm ranking 1 through 4. I want you to give me your 1 through 4 in this group. And as I told Tim, I'm rescuing you by not including George Springer in this group. I'm going to put him in the center fielders. But you have to rank 1 through 4. Yelich, Betts, Bellinger, Judge.
Oh,
how would
gosh.
You put those four?
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. Are we ranking them based on prior
you can rank them
or anticipation?
Any way you want.
Okay.
Yelich, Betts, Bellinger, Judge.
Okay. I'm going to say moving forward, and I'm going to say Cody Bellinger 1.
Wow.
Because I think moving forward, I mean, I'm saying, you know, overall, he's the youngest there. I think he has a lot of potential there. I was really encouraged by everything he did this season until about September. And then I'm going to say Christian Yelich, Mookie Betts, and then Aaron Judge.
Wow, you and Tim matched up completely. I think I've got clue with how I should do my ranking, so that's a big help. All right, let's talk about the two biggest free agents still left on the board, Hyunjin Ryu and Dallas Keuchel. Tell me what you think teams will love about them in terms of metrics and what are the concerns?
Yeah, so I think they're really interesting. You know, I was sort of, before Madison Bumgarner signed, I sort of grouped the three of them together, although Bumgarner's a little bit different, but none of them throw 100, you know, and there are these lefties who are kind of in this phase of their career where they're older, they're past 30, and we might expect, you know, maybe more craftiness and all of that, you know, sort of storyline to surround them. So with Ryu, I mean, there's no question he's been one of the best pitchers over the last year and a half or so. I mean, he's just second to DeGrom in ERA and pretty much anything else. But the concern that I have with him is his injury history. And I mean, you can see it just looking at his baseball reference page, looking at his innings pitch totals. And he's been on the injured list in almost every season of his career. We know he missed a season. And, you know, it's interesting because he has kind of a low volume of innings pitched at the major league level, and then a very high volume of innings pitched in the KBO before he came over. So it's almost like that initial volume is what is now contributing here. And, you know, he's a great pitcher when he's on. One other thing that really stands out with him is he limits hard contact, which I think we really saw the value of this year when everyone was hitting home runs and every ball was being hit hard. That did not happen. He allowed an 85.3 mile an hour average exit velocity, which was in the 96th percentile, of MLB pitchers, which among guys who face at least 500 batters, that's a huge sample size. He was right there towards the top or bottom, however you want to look at it, in terms of allowing a low average exit velocity. And with what we saw this year, with how if you put 99 miles an hour of exit velocity on it, it's probably going to go out. It's a really good thing for him to do that with throwing, being a soft tossing guy like that. And with Keuchel, you know, obviously he is the ultimate ground ball pitcher. Very soft tossing. And the real big difference between him and Ryu to me is that consistency and reliability. Keuchel's been on the injured list twice in his career. It was a neck injury in 2017. And since then, he hasn't been back on the injured list. I haven't heard about his neck since. He, obviously, we know he didn't throw a whole lot of innings last year because he signed late into the season, but I don't recall injuries having anything to do with that. So it's sort of, you know, the highs are higher with Ryu. But the bottom line and overall line, whatever you want to call it, is probably more consistent and reliable with Keuchel.
All right, give me a guess as to where each of these guys is going to wind up.
So I think Keuchel, especially with what we've seen about how they did not sign Strasburg or Cole, I think that Keuchel could make a lot of sense in Anaheim for the Angels. You know, ground ball pitcher. Can you imagine? I don't think he would ever give up a run if he had Andrelton Simmons and Rendon with his improved defense behind him. So I think that would be a great fit. And with Ryu, I'm a little less certain, but I find it hard to believe that the Twins aren't going to sign one of these guys with starting pitching being such a priority for them heading into the offseason. So I'm inclined to say that maybe he ends up there just because they really need one of these guys.
Before you go, give me a deal that you really liked and a deal that kind of made you go, I'm not sure.
So there have been a lot that I've liked this offseason, but I mean, maybe this is the obvious one, but the Yankees getting Gerrit Cole. I mean, I certainly took pause at 9 years, which is a lot for a pitcher, but he has no injury history. He's the best young pitcher in the game right now. You know, it's him and Jacob deGrom, but he certainly has the youth on his side in that discussion. And it's what they needed. It makes them World Series favorites, and it's just really hard to argue against it in any way. As in terms of one that gave me a little bit of pause, the Bumgarner deal is just interesting to me. I mean, he's just such an interesting case because it's so much about a lot of things that we remember from 2016 and all the other even years before that in the postseason. He did make 34 starts this year, so like maybe he is getting back to being the Bumgarner that we remember, who was just a workhorse before he had his dirt bike accident in 2017 and his fortunes kind of changed a bit. But, I mean, it's a lot of money, and 5 years is a long time for a pitcher who has honestly not been himself in at least the last 3 years and is now on the other side of 30 there.
Yeah, I wrote a piece about it yesterday about the concerns the teams have that those incredible home road splits, which,
yes,
you know, for a pitcher was almost akin to what the conversation is around Colorado Rockies hitters. Like, people are like, wow, San Francisco's a great pitcher's park. He thrived there, and you take him out of there, and he was a completely different pitcher. But on the other hand, the Diamondbacks, you know, they did a lot of digging, and he seems that he wanted to pitch there. So that's really interesting. His first game back in San Francisco will be a fascinating watch. How did your mom, the Giants fan, feel about Bumgarner going to the Diamondbacks?
She was not pleased. You know, these were the World Series teams of her life, honestly, because she wasn't quite aware of baseball the last time they won before this stretch in San Francisco. And, you know, it's always upsetting to see a team broken up like that. And she was pretty upset about it, but you know, she's still going to get to see him pitch. I'm trying to spin that as a positive. I love their Will Wilson trade, by the way. I know they also got Zach Cozart, but I love acquiring the number 15 overall pick from this year's draft. So kind of, we're trying to work on the positivity about the Giants moving forward.
I was going to ask, when your mom gets upset, you mentioned, does that manifest in tears? Does it manifest itself in four letter words? Does it, you know, sort of, she's sullen about things? How does that manifest?
It's typically a lot of text messages that say she's done with the team. If I had a screenshot of every, I'm done with them. I mean, we also get to the point during the season, there are often certain things where, oh, if we go to this game and they lose, I'm never going to a game again. Those come up as well.
Yeah, that's what Troy does just about every day when the Rangers are going through their low times. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show, mate!
Welcome to the show! Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby!
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
David Schoenfield covers baseball for ESPN.com. And Dave, as we get started, I'm going to throw a Bleacher tweet at you. This is from Mitchell at Tigers of Detroit, who asked about the Nomar Mazara deal. He says, it seems to have gone under the radar due to other signings. Do you like this deal for Chicago? Is it further deepens a good lineup, or does having two defensive liabilities in the outfield not worth it? What's your take there, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, Mazara, you know, interesting name. He hasn't fulfilled that potential when he came up as a, 21-year-old and looked like he might be a 30-homer kind of player, just hasn't hit for high averages. You know, he's peaked at 20 home runs, very consistent player, but really barely a replacement level player. You know, he's going to be 25. Maybe there's room for growth there. I don't see it. You know, 4 years in the majors, I think he is what he is at this point. Maybe the White Sox can figure out some way to untap some of that power potential, but it's an upgrade only because the White Sox were so awful in the outfield last year, but it's not a big deal in my mind.
No, and it's interesting to me that the Rangers clearly are trying to make a push to be relevant next year, and they trade Mazara. And if I were on the White Sox side of it, that would be my first question. Okay, why are these guys doing this right now? And it does feel like that they're trying to get out in front of the salary situation with Mazara, with a player that I think they clearly determined was not necessarily going to get better. And it's interesting, Mitchell asked about the defensive liabilities, two defensive liabilities in the outfield, because I was taking a little bit closer look at the trade that went down recently, just before the start of the winter meetings, the Tampa Bay Rays getting Hunter Renfro in a deal for Tommy Pham. And I was fascinated by the reaction of a lot of evaluators around baseball who love this trade for the Tampa Bay Rays. And a lot of that was based on the defense of Hunter Renfro. Now, I'd heard he was pretty good, but after that trade went down, I went back and I looked at the numbers, Dave. Wow. And I watched some video. He was second among all outfielders in defensive run saves. And you and I both know that teams don't necessarily look at that as being a perfect measurement for defense. Like a lot of defensive statistics, it's somewhat flawed. But then you go and you look at some video, and I texted a couple evaluators of other teams and asked them about Renfro defensively, and they said, look, he's not really that fast, but he's excellent at getting a jump, and man, is he smooth in the way that he moves. And so you couple him with Kevin Kiermaier, that is a beast of an outfield defensively.
Yeah, and plus Renfro has a very good throwing arm. Yeah, the Rays are one of those teams, you know this, Buster, whenever they do something, we always have to dig a little deeper to figure out why they made that trade. And on the surface, wow, why are you trading Tommy Pham with that good on-base percentage for Renfro, who has power but a poor on-base? because they're factoring in the defensive, you know, difference between the two is big enough to justify the offset in offense. And Pham, the metrics last year were not good for him, even though he's played center field in the past and not have a good year in left field. So, yeah, defensively, the Rays are viewing that as a huge, huge upgrade. And if they can untap something in Renfro, he could be a, you know, 35 to 40 homer guy.
And we've talked about how the Rays' working philosophy, because this is a team that does not tank, is let's find guys who can best take advantage of the 600 plate appearances that are available. Yeah. In other words, the best asset that any organization has is the opportunity to put guys on the field and help them try to get better, and they'll do that with Hunter Renfro. All right, Troy's all giddy about this Corey Kluber trade and about the Rangers' rotation. What do you think of the trade from the Rangers' perspective?
Look, it's obviously a worthwhile gamble. You know, how good is Kluber at this point? It's hard to say. You know, we can read too much into the seven bad starts of last year. 2 years ago, he was third in the Cy Young voting, so I don't think this is a, what, impending Felix Hernandez situation where Kluber's suddenly going to fall off the cliff. I would certainly expect some bounce back. We know the velocity's been down, the movement's been down, the strikeout rates are falling from his peak year in 2017. But you add him to Lance Lynn, Mike Minor, Kyle Gibson, Jordan Lyles, suddenly you can roll out five, you know, potentially above average major league starters. And in this day and age, you run out a rotation like that, you have a chance. So a great deal for the Rangers.
All right. Last year, the Astros won this division with 107 wins. They were 10 games ahead of Oakland. They were 29 games ahead of Troy's Rangers. They were 35 games ahead of the Angels, who are one of the most aggressive teams in this offseason, a change in manager, the addition of Anthony Rendon. We all expect that they'll add a pitcher at some point. Do you really see a landscape change in the American League West, or are you kind of like, nah, we got a long way to go?
Yeah, this is where we have a little reality situation here.
You hear this, Troy? Troy, listen here. You're getting a reality check right now from our friend Dave.
Sorry, Troy. Look, yeah, they're a long ways behind the Astros. I know the Astros have to replace Garrett Cole. They even have to replace Wade Miley's 33 starts. But this rotation is not necessarily a sure thing. Minor and Lynn both had career years last year, so logic says probably some regression on their parts. Maybe there's a reason the Indians didn't believe in Kluber and why nobody else, you know, made a better offer. There are some concerns about him. Jordan Lyles, we're banking on what? He had a couple of good months down the stretch with the Brewers. We don't really know how good he is. Kyle Gibson had some health issues in the second half last year and really struggled. So you could raise some potential concerns on all five of these starters, Troy. That being said, I still like the deal for Texas.
Come on, Dave. It's supposed
Troy,
to be
you want to count?
It's the holiday season. You're supposed to be building up my spirit.
You
Come
need
on.
A third baseman. Who's your first baseman? You have no offense at catcher. Who's your center fielder? Is Joey Gallo really good enough to play there every day? But otherwise, I really love the Rangers.
Thank you.
See, I really want you to ruin Troy's holiday. So I'm going to ask you just off the top of
Buster
the head.
The
off the top. Yeah, there you go. Off the top of your head. And I know you haven't dug necessarily, chest deep in the numbers, but tell me what right now you kind of see the gap between the two teams in the standings. I mentioned the gap last year at, 29 games. Where do you see the gap between these two teams right now?
Yeah, I get,
cause
look,
I put it, I have got a number in mind myself. Go ahead.
I'm going off top of my head. Okay. The Astros, you're 7 wins worse losing Garrett Cole. But you're going to replace that with Lance McCullers Jr. maybe. So maybe that's a 5-win drop from Garrett Cole to his replacement. The Rangers, they've probably, maybe they're 10 wins better with this pitching staff, you know. So what's that? You know, you're still at 15 wins or so. So look, 29 wins, Troy, that's a lot of wins to make up. It's not like the Houston lineup is suddenly going to get old and fall apart. They're still going to have the best lineup in the league or one of the best. And the Rangers, like I said, they do have these holes in the offense. You know, offseason's not over, but there's still a wide gap between the two teams.
So off the top of your head, you had 15. The number that popped into my head was 16. Oh, so okay. You and I are on the same page. But we'd say this. They're going to go to a new ballpark next spring.
Yep.
If they cut the gap in half, then you know what? It's been a year of progress. So Troy will be all happy and giddy, and I'll have to listen to that garbage all next year.
I'm banking on the entire Astros team getting suspended.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. look at this deal from the Indians' perspective, if you will. I told Tim that I get it. Like, I understand, and I know that a casual fan would say, what are you doing trading a Cy Young Award winner? The teams that get involved in these things, they don't care about past history. They care about what they would expect. And you made reference to Kluber and his stuff and, the velocity being down. Plus, he's more expensive. And I actually like what the Indians are doing. He made only 7 starts for them last year, and they won 93 games. Yeah. So what they're going to do is take that money that was allocated for Kluber with the savings they had, say it's $10 million, and they're going to go sign a second baseman, Cesar Hernandez or somebody, and I think that'll help their lineup. They demonstrated last year they have some good young starting pitching. I actually think it makes sense for them to do this. And the feedback I got from other teams was other clubs felt like they were getting ahead of what was going on with Kluber.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, we can question the return, but, you know, this reliever, Emmanuel Clase, I didn't know a lot about him, but watching some video of him, yeah, he throws a 100-mile-an-hour cutter. That's a legit pitch. You might look at the strikeout rates in the minors and his few games with the Rangers last year, nothing special, but Mariano Rivera never had a dominating strikeout rate. He gets weak contact, and that's what the potential is with this kid, with that cutter. So the Indians certainly believe he's a, you know, back-end reliever, maybe a future closer, you know. So they love his upside. So let's hold off on the trade, but like you on the analysis, you know, until we see how good this kid is. But like you said, Buster, if they spend that money elsewhere – especially a second baseman. I think the whole package, when you put it together, makes sense for Cleveland.
All right, let's go rapid fire. Give me 30, 40 seconds on some of these topics. First off, give me a team that's most in need of doing something right now.
Well, I'm going to surprise you and say the Atlanta Braves. I know they're a good team, but they need Josh Donaldson if they're going to be a World Series team. Their cleanup hitter right now is what? Nick Markakis, Adam Duvall platoon. They need another big bat if they want to go all the way.
I got the Angels in a starting pitcher, but I feel like Captain Obvious when I say that. Yeah. What do you got on the Red signing Wade Miley? I like it considering, you know, 2 years and $15 million, pretty, mid-level, low-level type of investment.
Yeah, really good rotation now, 5 deep. You got to have Trevor Bauer, you know, bounce back from that terrible 2 months he had with the Reds after the trade. But I just love, in general, a lot of losing teams from last year are making moves. The Angels, the Rangers, the Reds. I think across the sport, we're going to have a lot more competitive balance in 2020, and that's good for the game.
And lastly, and again, I need you to rain on Troy's parade. I'm really surprised that Anthony Rendon didn't wind up with the Texas Rangers. I thought he was the perfect guy for them. When he signed with the Angels, I get it. Given that they didn't sign Gerrit Cole, I can understand why the Angels would target him. He's a really good player. But I was absolutely stunned when he wound up not going to Texas after, you know, we saw some of the other teams come off the board.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's the perfect fit. You know, I know we sometimes overrate geography. Rendon's from Houston. He's not from Dallas, but he's from Texas. They need a third baseman, new park. Look, the Rangers, to me, they need to view themselves as a big market team, because if they have a good team, they're going to draw in that city. You know, when they were really good in 2010, 11, 12, they were packing in, you know, the Globe Life Field down there. So why they didn't spend to bring in a legit superstar hitter, I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, the feedback from agents is the Rangers were saying that their owners were not interested in those big long-term deals.
Yeah.
And that wind up being the difference between them signing Rendon or not. All right, sir, I appreciate it. Happy holidays to you.
Okay, you too.
Bleacher Tweets.
Okay, Buster, we've got a Bleacher Tweet here from our good friend Jason Amico. At Jason Amico, has there ever been a more impactful player to a given franchise, and particularly their postseason and World Series winning runs over a given stretch, that has left to a division rival in free agency like Madison Bumgarner?
Boy, and you kind of buried the lead. You got Jason Amico in studio today.
He is here. He is sitting here right next to me.
Why is Jason D'Amico in studio with you today? You haven't explained this whole thing.
So Jason is a actually Jason here. Step over to the mic. I'll let you explain yourself. Hold on.
What's up, Buster?
Jason, so tell me what brings you to the studio today?
Well, I finished college and I decided to follow in Troy's tumultuous footsteps and get a job here in Bristol.
So, way to go! Congratulations. When did you start?
I started in November. So. Sadly, right after the World Series, but luckily you're in
very nice. What's up with Troy not telling me this news?
I don't know. I just heard him one day. I'm like, wait, that sounds like the guy Buster always makes fun of. I think that's Troy. So then I just went up to him. So, yeah, here I am.
Yeah, very nice. All right, well, I'll answer your question directly off the top of my head. Boy, division rival. You know, I remember... back in the day when Mike Torres was with the Yankees and he signed with the Red Sox and Louis Tiant went from the Red Sox to the Yankees, that was a really big deal. Like in free agency, the Yankees, Red Sox stealing each other's players. If you want to talk about like a rival in the same league, I'll never forget when Reggie Jackson left the Yankees because he was Mr. October and he was like a really big deal. But those are the ones that pop to mind for someone who's older than you.
Yeah, my dad definitely is big on, you know, he grew up a 69 and 73 Mets fan, so he's also always telling me about the 77 Reggie Jackson World Series, and that must have been devastating for Yankee fans back then. But
it was.
I can definitely think,
it was devastating for Dodger fans. For someone like me, he made me cry. I was 13 and 14, and I was weeping like a 13 and 14-year-old because Reggie Jackson just picked on my Dodgers.
Three different pitchers, Buster. I don't know if we'll...
I know. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for telling me. Thanks for reminding me. Get out of here, Jason. It was good to talk with you.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you, Buster. Here's Troy back on the call.
All right. I'm glad you guys had your fun. Next tweet comes from Brian Simpson at bsimp120274. Hey, Buster, do you think Jacob deGrom and Alex Bregman are rethinking signing early extensions instead of testing free agency like Gerrit Cole, Steven Strasburg, Anthony Rendon, etc.?
You know, Jacob deGrom had Tommy John surgery, so I think it's hard for him to rethink. But, man, at the time that the Alex Bregman deal went down, $100 million, there were folks in baseball who were like, wow, if he waited a year, he could have gotten a lot of money. Like, right now, Alex Bregman might be in line for $150, $175 million. A lot of money left on the table, but I don't know if you can necessarily criticize anybody or necessarily rethink getting $100 million.
Christopher G. Brown at Chris G. Brown. Now that the Rangers got Corey Kluber and Houston lost Gerrit Cole and Wade Miley, who has the best rotation in the AL West?
I think your boys have to be in the conversation. Don't you think so, Troy?
I think you're right,
yeah.
Buster. I think we're going to be good.
They're the team. Very nice. I would totally agree with that. We don't know exactly how Houston's going to fill in the empty spots in their rotation, but as of this moment, the Texas Rangers leading the rotation competition in the American League West.
Love to hear it. Next one comes from Alan Boyle at AlanBoyle9475. Buster, why doesn't baseball do like football and mic the pitcher, catcher, and the bench? Then we won't have to worry about stealing signs and we'll speed up the game by at least 20 minutes.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that in the last few years. I do think at some point but baseball will find some sort of technology that all the, you know, the pitchers and the catchers can work together.
Jake Yergs at HeadWop26. How significant of a cut does an agent make on a contract? Scott Boras brokered nearly $1 billion worth of contracts last week.
The three contracts that he agreed to last week, and that's exclusive of Mike Moustakas, but Steven Strasburg and Anthony Rendon and Gerrit Cole, his cut was $44 million because he makes 5%. How about that?
Gosh, that's 5%. That's insane. Last one this morning, P.K. Steinberg at P.K. Steinberg. When it comes to the nuts and bolts and intricacies of players and teams, which do you find more interesting, free agency signings or trades?
P.K., you know, I love them both. I'm sorry. It's like choosing between children. I really do. I love the, you know, sort of the thinking behind the signings. Like I was talking with Tim about Madison Bumgarner, and then there's the Kluber trade, and you break it down, and you try to see why it makes sense for the Indians. You try to see why it makes sense for the Rangers. But I that's my favorite part of the game. There's no doubt about it. You know, short of a game seven of the World Series, I love the acquisitions, the deals, all that stuff.
I personally love free agency signings more because aside from money, there are other reasons that go into it. So I like from a more, you know, life perspective, why do people choose to go the places that they go? Because trades, you know, you're kind of told one day, hey, you're going somewhere and you don't really have a choice. So I like seeing where people is choose to go when they have the choice.
Yeah, but on trades, you got to try to figure out what's the logic behind the two sides and try to anticipate. For example, you know, that we talked about the Corey Kluber trade and why Cleveland felt it was important to make it and why the Rangers made it. And I love sort of digging into the team side of that.
Well, you are clearly a more cerebral person than I, Buster. Thank you for the tweets this morning, guys. We'll have another podcast this week, so keep them coming. Use the hashtag Bleacher Tweets.
And that's it for today. My thanks to Dave, to Sarah, to Tim, to Jason for stopping by the studio, and to Troy Farkas, who produces this podcast, even when he's overwhelmed with joy, like he is right now, that the Texas Rangers are relevant again. Looks like we're going to have another podcast on Thursday. That'll be the last one, I think, before the New Year's. But enjoy the day and enjoy the Gerrit Cole press conference. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.